From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 239 with guest Rodney Buki, recorded Wednesday, October 26th, 2011. Run As Radio is produced each week by Quap Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow the boys on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
This is Richard Campbell. It's Run As Radio. I'm at Tech Days in Toronto, and I'm sitting with Rodney Buki. Hey, Rodney.
Hey, Richard. How are you?
You used to be with Microsoft, but you're not anymore.
I did used to be with Microsoft. And I'll tell you, at Tech Days here, it's a lot more fun participating than it is hosting.
Yeah, organizing. It's a lot of work.
Yes.
So what are you working on these days?
So I'm working at a CMS consulting in Toronto. Mm-hmm. So we're a Microsoft infrastructure-based consulting firm. So I'm focusing more on the virtualization side of things, Hyper-V, Virtual Machine Manager, System Center 2012 stuff.
Right. You did this great session using Zen Desktop in combination with Hyper-V, and I really wanted to talk to you more about it.
Yeah, well, one of the things I wasn't able to do at Microsoft was do demos from an iPad.
I see.
Today we started off the demo using showing Windows 7 running on an iPad through Citrix.
Nice. So the Windows 7 is actually running on a PC somewhere, but you're able to see it on your iPad.
Yeah, it's a Hyper-V virtual machine.
Okay.
That's running in the cloud.
Right.
And we're just accessing it over an internet connection from my iPad. So my iPad was actually tethered to my iPhone and connected to the Citrix cloud. So
via 3G then?
Yes, via 3G.
Interesting. So, I mean, those are fairly tenuous bandwidth connections. Is Citrix usable at that speed?
Yeah, it's very much like Terminal Services Remote Desktop.
Right.
It's the, similar protocol. And in reality, you're just really sending down screen refreshes. All the processing and everything like that is happening on the back end on the Hyper-V servers in the virtual environment.
Right.
But, you're just streaming down, refreshes of the screen. So not really very high bandwidth. It'll work. I think the minimum requirements is actually only like 14.4.
Really? Like
speeds,
dial-up speeds?
Like dial-up speeds, yeah.
And I think it's more the bonks, the latency hits that you're going to
feel. Latency is the big issue.
Yeah.
In that regard, yeah.
How do you translate the touch effects of the iPad into mouse movements?
So one of the things, there's a specific application that goes onto your iPad. It's a Citrix receiver. Mm-hmm. And anybody, if you've got an iPad or an iPhone or an Android device, you can actually download that and install it and set up a demo account.
Okay.
The screen pops up, and one of the options is to create a demo account.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, which to, a full touch-enabled device, what happens then is there's the virtual keyboard. And what happens is you can actually enable the pointer, and then your entire screen actually becomes the touchpad. So if you think of a notebook having a touchpad.
Right, right.
Now your entire screen is this touchpad. So you're not exactly touching on a particular icon. You're just moving your finger around, and there's the cursor is offset from where your finger is.
Okay.
Right?
So you can see it for starters.
So you can see it, yes. It's not blocked by your fat fingers.
Right.
And then you've got also multi-touch gestures. Mm-hmm. So you can do, two fingers to scroll. You can do three fingers to right click.
Nice.
There's a number of different options there.
So you do have to learn the sort of rules for that, but
yes.
It doesn't sound like it's terribly arduous.
No, it's not. It's pretty simple and straightforward, and it's a great UI, and it's very easy to learn and very easy to understand.
Now, do you see this? Is it specifically about making the iPad work with regular applications that is why you do this, or is there other advantages?
Yeah, I mean, most of what we see is, going to a customer site and they've got Zen App.
Mm-hmm.
Zen App is the application streaming functionality, similar
right.
to App V from Microsoft. And that's really what most people are using it for right now, is they've deployed Zen App and they're streaming applications, and then they can launch those applications like Word or whatever custom line business application they have on their iPad. So we had a customer, we did a service manager deployment for incident management for their organization. And all their technicians are, desk side technicians, and they move around and they don't always have a PC with them where they can open up that management console and see, what incidents do I have or update incidents. With that, we were able to publish the console through Citrix. They get access to it through their iPad.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're sitting next to somebody's desk and they're trying to see what the issue is, they can pull up the console, they can pull up the incident, they can close it, they can resolve it, they can do whatever they need to do, update it, escalate it, all from their iPad without having to run back and forth to their desks.
Right, or drag a whole laptop around.
Or drag a whole laptop, and then, you know, you get 2 hours battery life if you're lucky.
Right.
You know, an iPad is good for, you know, usually a good 6 to 8 hours, and so...
Nice. And it sounds like it's the right UI solution too, that you're really just looking up data and marking things as completed or still open, like more drop down than typing.
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of, you know, looking up information. It's not entering in information. Another area we see a lot of uptake is, you know, certain areas where they've got like really strict security or compliance regulations, like a bank, for example. You know, all the tellers have a PC in front of them. And if you think about it, do you want your teller that you're dealing with who has access to all your financial information to be using a PC that's connected to the internet?
Right.
In this case here, you know, do you want that data, all your private, personal, financial data coming outside of that data center? Or do you want people going into the data center?
Right.
So with this here...
So wouldn't you normally just keep the PC locked out? Like, it doesn't have any access to the internet.
Yeah, it doesn't have any access to the internet. It's a thin client.
Yeah.
And the Windows 7 machine is running in the data center. So wherever your branch is, you know, it's a branch office, and wherever that office is, they're still connecting into the data center. That virtual machine that's accessing the data is in the data center.
Right.
And that data never leaves. And so it's very easy to secure that data, because now you're protecting the data center, and who cares about everything else outside of that space?
Right.
And it, from a manageability perspective, now I don't care about those machines in the branch offices, because they're really just windows into the environment.
Right,
and I'm managing the environment in my data center.
And are we really running an instance per user, or is this, keep thinking of the terminal services model where I have multiple users on a given application. Like, how does that shape out?
So it's in a way, it's very similar to terminal services. In terminal services, you know, you have a server and you've got 20 people connected to that server and they're all sharing the resources on that server.
Right.
This is similar in a way because you've got 20 people connected to 20 individual Windows 7 virtual machines running on a single Hyper-V server. But where a difference comes in is in terminal server environment, if somebody is connected to that terminal server and they're running a specific application that is really kind of taxing the CPU of that system.
Right.
And your terminal server is sitting there at 80% CPU utilization, while everybody's terminal server session is running at 80%.
It's all struggling, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas with this, my Windows desktop is running on a Hyper-V host, and it might be running at 80 or 90% utilization.
Mm-hmm.
That host system that you've got it running on with its 16 cores and everything like that, you know, it's barely a hiccup on that system.
Plus it's also totally granular. So if you want to move a VM over to another machine, is it that big a deal?
No, you can, it's all live migratable, right?
Right.
And so it really kind of impacts just that user then and not the other virtual machines running
on that. It's interesting. It seems like virtualization has basically put terminal services to bed in some ways.
Yeah. And really that's kind of like, you know, when we're talking about Citrix, a lot of this stuff you can do with remote desktop services in 2008 R2. The benefit is there's some additional functionality that you get out of the Xen desktop and Xen app solutions.
Right.
Think about terminal server, right? Windows 2000 terminal server was okay, but
that's 10 years ago.
Yeah, and 90% of the people who ran it ran MetaFrame on top of it.
Right.
Right, because there was some additional functionality that Citrix provided back then through MetaFrame and that. And this is really just kind of an extension with it. You know, Citrix always has another layer that goes on top of the existing Microsoft solution that really kind of adds some functionality, simplifies management a little bit, and provides, you know, a sort of a better solution.
I guess licensing becomes a challenge around this. Is Xen Desktop, do you pay for that?
So Xen Desktop has its own license.
Right.
There's Xen App, which is the application delivery portion. There's
Xen
Desktop, which is the desktop delivery portion. They're individually licensed, so they're separate components. And then there's a standard advanced enterprise edition of those. The real challenge, again, with licensing comes on the Microsoft side of things.
Right.
Because, you know, there's Hyper-V. You have your Hyper-V hosts. You have your virtual machine manager server and that infrastructure.
Yeah.
But it's the licensing of the virtual machines.
With all those Win 7 instances.
It's not, you know, going out and saying, hey, I've got, you know, 1,000 licenses for Windows 7 to use in my environment.
Right.
They have special licensing, and the special licensing ends up being a little bit cheaper than, you know, going out and buying a thousand
straight OEM licenses. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they have a specific BDI licensing program that offers some of that reduced cost from that.
So what's the role of Xen App in all this? If I've got a Hyper-V Win 7 instance on the back end and I've got Xen Desktop and get access to it, what do I need the app piece for?
So Zen App is the application delivery piece.
Okay.
So when you think about it, if you take a base Windows 7 installation and you install, there's the Zen App client and there's a Zen desktop client that get installed in there. That there alone takes about roughly about 8 to 10 gigs of disk space. That's just a base Windows 7 installation, Service Pack 1, the updates, right? It's about 10 gigs. So now if you install Office in that and you install Acrobat Reader and you install all those applications that people need.
A few more gigs.
We're up to 20, 25 gigs maybe, right? And then you spin up 100 virtual machines that are all 25 gigs. And all of a sudden you've got 250 gigs.
Yeah, you got problems.
So you're looking at 250 gigs of disk space for 100 virtual machines versus 100 gigs of disk space. So now we've got the applications being streamed from Zen App. So they're not actually installed on that client themselves.
Right.
So we're saving disk space. But more importantly, it's a lot easier to manage and update those applications. Because instead of having to go and update the master image.
Right. Light each VM up and update them. Whole thing.
I don't necessarily have to light up each VM, but I have to start up the master image and I need to redeploy that master image. Instead, I can go into Zen App or Application Virtualization from Microsoft, resequence that, republish that. And the next time the user launches that application, whether or not they relaunch their desktop session, they just need to relaunch the application and they'll get the updated version of it.
Okay. And I guess the other piece of this is, why are we using Hyper-V at all then? Why not just use Zen all the way through the stack?
So you can. And that's actually one of the nice things with Zen Desktop is it actually supports all the virtualization platforms.
Right.
So if you've got Zen Server, if you've got VMware, if you've got Hyper-V, it works with all of those.
Right.
The Zen Desktop basically connects to either the Zen Server Management Tool, the Hyper-V Management Tools being Virtual Machine Manager, or Virtual Center if you've got VMware.
So it does matter.
Doesn't matter. And in the case of using a Virtual Machine Manager and Hyper-V, you've got the additional ability then to control it all through PowerShell.
Right,
Zen Desktop supports PowerShell. So now all these things that you do in your environment, your current existing Hyper-V environment with PowerShell, now extend into your Zen Desktop environment.
And SCVMM actually will manage VM instances and Zen instances as well.
Yes. And yeah, and it will also manage your VMware environments as well if you've got it. So there's a lot of functionality there, and it's kind of an interesting interop story because you've got a number of different pieces that all kind of work together.
Yeah, that mix and match with each other pretty painlessly.
And on the front end, as far as users are concerned, you know, they pop in, they get their same desktop. And there's a lot of other technologies like user state virtualization so that, you know, users can have a machine that has, you know, a custom wallpaper and their favorite, you know, Outlook autocomplete settings and their customized Word dictionary. So you can have all of that. And it's redirected, and no matter where they log on from, if they log on from a PC at home, if they log on from a browser at an internet kiosk, or if they're logging on from their iPad, they have the same exact experience no matter where they are.
But that's because, in the end, it all goes back to that virtual machine running on a server somewhere.
Yeah, you've got this virtual machine that's running, and you've got your OS abstracted from your application level and also from your user profile level.
Right. How do we deal when we start changing around with the clients like that, with things like printing, USB keys, you know, the other peripherals that are local but need to attach to the remote instance?
So the Citrix client itself actually has that capability.
Really?
So if you've got a USB device that's plugged into your machine, or if you're connected from your iPad to an AirPlay printer, as an example, it just works.
Right. I mean, iPad avoids this by not having a USB port.
Yeah. But you know, an organization that maybe uses smart cards to log in, right?
Right, right.
There is USB pass through, just like there is with a remote desktop session.
You know, so the VM running under Hyper-V back on the server sees the USB device. So that's Zen Desktop in action there.
Yeah, it's basically USB redirection through the, you can do it through the remote desktop protocol. You also do it through the ICA client, which is what Citrix uses.
Is it device specific, or does it just work for anything that's USB?
For most things, it'll just work through USB. So smart card readers, USB devices, you know, storage devices, in some cases, webcams.
Right. Scanners.
Scanners.
Yeah.
Printers.
I mean, interesting challenges to get all those different combinations working.
Yeah. But. And I mean, it all depends on the use case, right?
Yeah.
Not everything is an ideal scenario for VDI.
Right.
For your, you know, 1,000 user organization that has, you know, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 office worker type scenarios, in, I think it was Gartner did a study and said you're not really saving any money over a 3-year cycle,
right,
versus, you know, VDI versus your existing, you know, physical desktop infrastructure.
Right.
In some small businesses, it does. Citrix bought a company called Kaizia a while ago, and they're really focused on small business, and it's almost like VDI in a box, right? So it is for that, you know, 10, 15, 20 user shop to get VDI to get rid of that sort of desktop management cycle because they don't have somebody there.
Yeah, it's when you don't have a guy who's doing that all the time. And it sounds more like a greenfield setup. I don't want to deploy the desktops in the first place. I'm going to minimize all of this.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like you're a cloud solution for your organization. You've got Office 365 for those applications, and now you need something to access them by, you know, and VDI in a box for that small organization is simple. And from a managed services perspective, right, you have the organization come in and deploy it, and they manage it, and they can manage it all remotely, and you don't need anybody on site then to run that.
No, that's pretty cool. And it sort of gets into this idea. I've looked at a few of these dedicated Zen desktop terminals. I mean, they're quite expensive, only a couple $100.
Yeah.
And they have access to the internet, so, you know, your whole Office 365 play works. But then other than that, they just speak to terminal services or Zen or Hyper-V on the back end.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of presenting you a desktop with those applications.
Yeah, the user for the most part can't tell the difference one way or the other.
No,
except there's no disk drive. There's not in secure environments. It's really quite compelling that it's just there isn't anything in that branch office. It's all back in a central store.
Well, and the hardware lifecycle for that, you know, that thin client is a lot longer than a PC. Yeah. So I did a thin client deployment 6 or 7 years ago when I still worked in Winnipeg.
Right.
And those thin clients are still running. And that's in a manufacturing environment where they're getting covered in metal shavings and hydraulic oil and things like that. There's no moving parts.
Right. Yeah. They're so robust. This reminds me of the old VT100s.
Yeah.
You know, the serial terminals were basically bulletproof.
Yeah. A lot of those things, you know, if there was an infrastructure that they could connect to, probably still work today.
They would still run. But PCs are a lot more fragile. So getting them out of there makes a lot of sense.
And PCs need to be refreshed, right? So every few years it needs to be refreshed because there's a new operating system, and that new operating system has different resource requirements. Right. And those desktops are expensive.
Well, and one of the things I've been seeing, maybe you've run across this as well, is we've got aging hardware. They're not prepared to take on the expense to buy all new PCs, so let's roll out this Zen desktop approach on the old hardware until it fails, and then we'll flop it for dedicated Zen machines. So the old hardware, the load gets lightened on it by running Zen desktop. The work's actually being done back in the cloud.
Yeah. Well, and there's this other trend towards consumerization of IT.
Yeah. You know, bring your own terminal.
Bring your own stuff.
Right.
I don't care what you bring. And, you know, you bring it in, and we'll provide the environment.
Right.
And so with... you know, with Citrix, there's clients for iPad, iPhone, Android, Linux, Mac, PC. Bring in whatever you want.
You only have to run this one piece of software, and you have access to the whole stack.
And you have access to the whole stack, and then we still have that controlled environment. So I can control the desktop environment that you have Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, when you're under my control. But when you go home and you disconnect from our network and you're sitting on the train or you're at home or whatever, you've got your own environment.
It's your machine.
And whatever's happening on your environment doesn't affect mine.
Right.
And I don't need to worry about provisioning you any hardware.
Right. Right. Interesting crossover there. Yeah. Of course, he's on the train. He still wants to work. He still punch back to the office and get access to it. This section of Run As Radio is sponsored by Secret Server, the password management software for IT admins. Secret Server helps you manage local admin passwords and service accounts the right way. Get your free 30-day trial for Secret Server at runasradio.com/secret-server.
Well, and we've had discussions with a number of school boards that are looking at that, right?
Really?
Because they've got students that come in, and do they want to, you know, go out and spend who knows how much money on notebooks and give every one of their students a notebook?
Right.
Or do they just want to let the student bring in whatever notebook they already own and run that way? And that's really kind of a compelling situation where all of a sudden it's like, you know, from a school board, they're always struggling with budgets, right?
Sure.
And now I don't need to spend however many hundreds of thousands of dollars on notebooks that are going to get trashed.
Right. Or tell students they have to buy a particular piece of equipment either.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't need to worry about that. It's just bring in whatever you have, and we can still control the environment, and we can be sure then that everybody has the exact same environment and the exact same capabilities and performance.
So what's the battle of scale like as these numbers start to get up? Like, what can we reasonably expect one mid-sized server to handle in terms of VMs?
Well, one of the challenges right now is this whole, memory consumption. That's really kind of, that's when you're running Windows 7 on a Hyper-V host, you can get a lot of them running up and running on there. The problem is right now there's no support for things like dynamic memory or memory overcommit. So, you know, that workstation that you start up with 1 gig of memory, it's consuming 1 gig of memory, even though it's idling away and only using 256 megs.
Right.
Right. And so that's kind of one of the challenges, but it's really just a matter of having enough hosts to support the infrastructure that you're running. And then so, high availability isn't really a challenge,
right?
Because the high availability piece is at the broker level. So you have multiple desktop delivery controllers, just like you'd have multiple AppV or multiple Xen app servers, to, you know, in case your desktop controller goes down, because that really is what controls access to it.
Right.
You know, if a virtual machine is running on Hyper-V host 1 and that Hyper-V host
tanks
starts on fire, you know, the user's session will end, obviously.
Yes.
But they'll just log back in and they'll get a session on one of the other available hosts. Right. Right. And because their user state is virtualized and because their applications are virtualized, they'll probably lose maybe a little bit of work. You know, autosave and all that functionality still works.
It's 15 minutes behind.
Yeah. You know, it's a few minutes behind that they've lost a little bit of work, but, you know, they just start up and running again. As opposed to, you know, if that user's desktop
were caught fire,
then, you know,
they're out.
Then they're out. Yeah. And how long does it take you to reprovision a new desktop for them with the OS, with the applications that they need, with their data?
Even if they've got the user state backed up, it's provisioning the machine. It's a time consuming
problem. Yeah. I mean, it's much faster to provision a virtual machine than it is a physical machine.
Sure. And does it make sense to run the host yourself, or is this something you rent from the cloud, or, you know, EC2 instances or even Azure instances?
Right now it's something you host yourself.
Yeah.
Azure won't support the roles that are required to run this infrastructure.
Right.
You probably could do it on Amazon.
Yeah.
Probably could do it on Amazon. It would take a little bit of configuration. The problem is the desktop controller from Citrix, and Microsoft will only talk to VMM, right?
Right?
So you can talk to VMM and it can manage Hyper-V host.
Right.
Until those management interfaces actually manage
to EC2 live in the cloud
and can work and create and spin up instances up there, that's kind of the limitation.
So this is still infrastructure running ourselves, but I see the path forward that this is possible.
Oh, definitely. You know, definitely.
We need to get some licensing nailed for
it. And I mean, from that, you know, cloud perspective, right? Is as a hoster, you could host this for organizations.
Sure.
Right? Because it doesn't matter where that data center is. As long as you've got some kind of internet connectivity to connect to it.
Right.
That's fine. And so there's more of a hosting play there than a cloud play.
Well, I think that's one of the battles would be with the branch offices is I've got to keep a close eye on how many stations do I have in that branch office. Is the pipe back to the central data center big enough? That's going to be sort of my limiting features, getting a sense of how much bandwidth each one of those clients consumes.
Yeah. And branch office, again, is another one of those scenarios, right?
Don't want to run the hardware.
No, and banks are kind of one of those key areas because banks are really just a whole bunch of branch offices.
Right, right.
But they also have this security and compliance regulations where this data needs to, you know, it's your financial data, right? It needs to be locked in a secure room and nobody has access to it, right? And so do you want the teller to have a full client surfing the internet, traveling to whatever malicious websites they have, and then pulling up your account information?
Yeah, not so good. Well, I like the idea of just dumbing it down to the point where nothing's there. There's just no way to take anything out of it.
And then if something goes wrong with that thin client, you unplug it, you plug a new one back in, and boot it up, and away you go.
And off you go again. Very interesting stuff. Is there anything in terms of app development that you start to take into consideration when you're running this mode? Is it something special? I mean, you obviously got Office working this way.
Yeah. So it was actually interesting that you asked it because a question came up in the session.
Oh, really?
Do I need to do anything special with my applications to deliver them virtually? And the answer is no.
Really?
The sequencing process is really a diff. You know, you have a machine that is a base machine, a base Windows machine, whether it's XP or Vista or Windows 7, whatever it is. You start the sequencer, you install your application, you launch your application, you go through all the little prompts and everything like that. You shut down the application and then you shut down the sequencer and it looks at, you know, what's changed from my original configuration.
Right.
And those changes then are packaged up into an application package. And then there's a client on the machine that actually can launch that. Mm-hmm. It's very similar to a virtual machine. You know, everything is constrained and contained in a VHD file.
Right.
And then virtual PC can open up that VHD file.
Right.
And it's the same sort of process. And so there's really, I haven't come across any applications that haven't been able to be sequenced. Some of them are more complex.
Right.
You know, something like Office is a lot more complex because of all the components as opposed to Adobe Reader, which is a single...
Yeah, not a big deal. I'd also think there's certain apps that just wouldn't make sense, like, say, AutoCAD, where, yeah, you know, exactly. Utilization of the hardware is incredibly important. And I don't know if this is true or not, that Zen Desktop actually supports video acceleration, like taking advantage of GPUs.
So it does. Similar to how Remote FX, mm-hmm. is that functionality that came with Service Pack 1 for 2008 R2.
Right.
They've got a feature called HDX.
Okay.
And HD acceleration, and it does a lot of that sort of graphic rendering on the local device, mm-hmm. rather than doing it on the server and then just sending down screen refreshes.
Right.
So it's a little bit more hardware infrastructure required there, because there's something on that thin client needs to be able to render this content.
Sure.
But still, from that sort of perspective, where you know you're trying to run something like AutoCAD or, mm-hmm. or fluid simulations or things, yeah. like that require like massive horsepower,
GPU intensive.
Yeah, in that case, there's still a need for a machine that can run that. There are still some options there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can stream that. Instead of using that as a virtual machine that's running on Hyper-V, you can stream that master image that you've created to a physical box.
Right.
Right. And so, you can have like, you know, in that AutoCAD type scenario where they're doing this kind of, massive calculations, right? You have got a bunch of Blade servers in, mm-hmm. in a data center, and you're streaming that master image that you've created down to that Blade, and
right.
then they're remotely connecting to that Blade server, and then they've
instance.
Got that the resources that they require and the rendering that they require to support that.
That's cool, and that's, you know, almost private cloudish. You could scale that as necessary,
yeah.
and the kind of work you need to
yeah.
do. Okay, one more direction to go on this, and that is, you know, can we eliminate Citrix from the loop? I mean, Microsoft's done a pretty good job of giving away a lot of this technology. I don't know where App V is in that, but what's the client technology that Microsoft's got in this space?
So you can do this all through Microsoft technologies. Mm-hmm. So App V is their sort of Zen app replacements,
right.
for application delivery. And
I don't think that's free, though.
No, it's not free. It's part of the MDOP suite.
Right.
So if you've got MDOP, you have App V and you
own it already.
You can do this, yeah. So it's a little bit more difficult to get the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
But Remote Desktop Services includes the VDI broker and has all the functionality to do this. But there are some limitations that that come into play.
I bet they don't have an iPad client.
There's no iPad client. Mm-hmm. There's no Linux client. There's
right.
no Mac client. You can get at it through a web browser, but it's IE7 or higher because there's an ActiveX control.
Right, and now we're back to that same problem with the iPad. There's still not an answer there.
Yeah, the Microsoft solution is mm-hmm. very Microsoft-centric.
Of course.
Whereas the Zen Desktop one is very sort of
platform agnostic. That's
cool. There's clients for everything.
Right, right.
And that's really kind of one of their key, when you look at their marketing, messaging, things like that, they call it FlexCast.
Right.
FlexCast.
Yeah, they're not platform-specific.
No, it's any device, anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So any whammies? What do you know, where do people stumble when they try and do this?
I think the biggest thing, the biggest stumbling block is just not having the proper infrastructure in place.
Right.
And I mean, that's kind of a common issue, right? You know, we go into client sites all the time and they're having performance issues with SharePoint as an example. And you take a look at it and you're like, well, your SharePoint issue is the fact that SQL is running on a USB hard drive.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's the stumbling block.
Yeah. That's going to slow you down a bit.
And those are kind of the typical issues, right? It is not having enough of an infrastructure to support what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And we're talking about the strength of the server that's running the VMs.
In that case, yeah. It's either not a powerful enough host or not enough hosts to run the number of virtual machines that you want to run.
Right.
So in my, you know, even in the demo lab that I have here, right, I've got two quad core notebooks with, two individual drives, mm-hmm. and things are kind of spread out and it's still kind of slow and clunky, right?
Sure.
Because of the hardware that it's running on.
I guess the question is, what's the minimum provision really for a Win7 instance? Is it a couple of cores and 2 gigs of RAM? Like, what does that look like to you?
No, so for that, you've got, basically the minimum is the same minimum that you'd have for a physical machine.
Right.
So Win7 on a single core with a gig of memory gives you pretty good performance.
It should work.
And it depends on the applications that you're running
sure.
on there. But in reality, you know, 1 gig with a single core CPU, now you start taking a look at, well, what are the host requirements to run that? And so
right.
Microsoft's recommendations, you know, when you talk about, for example, CPU overcommit is 12-to-1 ratio. So for every physical core I have in my host, I can have 12 virtual machines.
Right. Or 12 virtual cores, essentially.
12 virtual cores.
So it might be 6 instances of dual core, 12 instances of single core.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so, and that's then where, you know, a lot of things are kind of like, well, I've got a quad core machine. I'll fire up 100 machines.
Gee.
Well, that'll work.
Yeah.
But from a, you know, performance perspective, you really shouldn't have more than 48 single
right.
core machines running on there.
Right. That's fair. But even then the memory requirements for that.
And then the memory requirement for that is 48 gigs
because you've got
48 machines running, and then you need some host reserves.
Should be a little host room there.
Yeah, there should be some host room there. So you're looking at, four core, four way system
right.
with 64 gigs of RAM, can run, 50 to 60 machines, but probably most people will be thinking, well, it can probably run a lot more.
Yeah, it really can. That's sort of the threshold.
You can, but you start getting performance limitations, and it'd be one of those things where you call Microsoft for support and say, you know what, I've got like 100 Windows 7 machines running on this server, and it's really slow. And they'll take a look, and they're like, well, you've exceeded our 12-to-1 ratio,
right?
I bet you if you shut down half those machines, your performance will skyrocket.
Yeah. But it also seems to me like there's a cushion there that once I get to 50 on the first machine, I could start arguing for a second server. Once we're at 70, 80, if we get that second server and split them down to 40, we're in pretty good shape again.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just a matter of, balancing those across the hosts.
Right.
And then the desktop delivery controller just says, hey, you know what? These are the available machines, and it connects you up.
And it just round robin between them? Like, how do you keep that balance going?
Yeah, it just basically looks at, what resources are available and where the machines are available, and it connects you to that machine. And
does it tend to fill up the first one and then fill up the second one, or is it split?
No, it'll balance it across the different host machines that
are
there.
That's cool. Rodney, this is insightful. I've always wondered how this stuff was coming along. It was great to see you do this talk.
Well, thank you very much.
And I guess it's going to be up on the Tech Day site by the end of the month?
I believe they recorded it, and it'll be up there. And I know they recorded the slides and the audio, but I think they may have also recorded some video. And so
good. If
you miss my pretty face, you'll get to see it.
Rodney Buchy, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.